The scripture reading this week is the 23rd Psalm. Listen now for the word of the Lord. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside still waters. He restores my soul. He leads me in right paths for his name's sake. Even though I walk through the darkest valley, I fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup overflows. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I shall dwell in the house of the Lord my whole life long. This is the word of the Lord. Hollywood likes the sound of the King James Version of the 23rd Psalm, and so a lot of us are more accustomed to that version. In every movie and television show and at every funeral on those shows, you hear the pastor intoning with great gravitas, "Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I shall fear no evil." The shadow of death. It has loomed this week in our national news. On Monday, two homemade bombs went off near the finish line of the Boston Marathon. Three people were killed and more than 180 were injured. In the next few days, there was a great deal of confusion and fear, and there was a lot of misreporting. The number of deaths was at first greatly exaggerated in some news outlets. And at first there were no suspects, and then there were some people who were wrongly suspected, and then there were real suspects, and some places were saying that they had been arrested when they hadn't yet, and the city of Boston was then put on lockdown while the police and the FBI chased two young men, who it turns out had also shot an MIT security guard and robbed a convenience store in their attempt to get away, and the authorities ended up killing one of the suspects and eventually catching the other. And that, unfortunately, was far from the only appearance by the shadow of death in our news. Letters intended for President Obama containing the toxin ricin were intercepted. And yesterday in Denver, two people were shot at a rally in Civic Center Park. Fortunately, their injuries were not life-threatening, or that would have brought the tally of gun deaths in this country since the tragedy at Newtown, Connecticut, up to 3,532 people. And of course, the shadow of death blossomed as a smoke cloud over West Texas Wednesday evening when a fertilizer plant there exploded, leveling four blocks, including a nursing home. So far, we have 15 confirmed deaths there, many more missing, and over 160 injured in that explosion. It needs to be said that what is really very rare here, so rare that it entirely dominates a whole week's worth of news, is sadly commonplace in some other places. On the same day as the Boston Marathon bombing, car bombs in Iraq killed 30 people. In Pakistan, American drones flying overhead every day keep the people there constantly aware that about 100 times a year, we drop missiles and bombs which have similar effects, killing unknown numbers of people for certain, but the most conservative estimates say that at least 3,000 people have been killed in the past 4 years. Similarly, in Yemen, which you might not even know that we're at war with, our drones have struck there 40 times in this last year. So yes, death can cast a long shadow. And it isn't just with violence in faraway places. We're all touched personally by death in our families and among our friends. All of us have had personal experience, perhaps at some time, or will have personal experience of people we love close to us passing away. And as a congregation, we have recently witnessed the passing of Margaret Ray and Helen Yeager. Many of us can feel palpably the reality that as we age, more and more of those we love will die, as we will ourselves one day. And death looms not just for individuals, but for institutions as well. Everything ends. Everything. Neither governments nor churches last forever. Our denomination, like all denominations in this country, has been steeply declining for a long time, and our church is not escaping this trend. And even if we did somehow escape this trend, become the exception, it would only be a delaying action. This church, too, will one day die. The comforting words of the psalmist here in Psalm 23 suggest that even when death is looming over us, even when the shadow of death seems overwhelmingly present to us, that if we trust in God, we will still fear no evil. But the reality seems to be that we are really very afraid. Most of the time, we can suppress the fear with denial, and sometimes, other times, we tend to panic and run away from the fear of death, telling ourselves that we can escape the shadow of death. It won't cover us as it does everyone and everything else. And in our denial and our panic, we tragically sow more havoc and death in our wake. By trying to protect ourselves from death, we become killers. Because those thousands that we have killed with drones and the hundreds of thousands that we have died as a result of our military actions in the Middle East were killed because of our fear of terrorism, because of our fear of death. And the tragedy turns out that we are running from shadows. You know what has more chance of killing you than terrorism? Your television falling on you. I'm not joking. More people in this country die every year because their television fell on them than die due to terrorism. You know what else has more chance of killing you? A wasp or a bee sting. We're frightened by shadows, nothing more. Things which pose a real risk, we treat casually. For example, your car is a very real danger. We tolerate 30,000 deaths a year in this country by automobile accidents so that we can drive 75 on the interstate. By some estimates, about 6,000 of those deaths might be attributable partially to cell phone usage while driving. So that means that your cell phone is about 200 times more lethal than terrorism. Now, who's afraid of their cell phone? Shadow or not, though, there is no running from death, and running just causes more damage. I spent a lot of time on the beach as a kid, and I learned something from my time playing in the surf. When you're standing in the ocean, especially when you're a kid and you're little, and you feel the water start to recede, to pull like a vacuum down your legs, and it starts to rise in a swell up behind you, it can be pretty frightening. And most people's first instinct, their first reaction when they feel a wave starting to rise up behind them, is to try to run from the wave. Here's the thing, though. The ocean is much stronger than you are. And if you run back up the beach away from that coming wave, this is the wrong instinct, because when you turn your back on the ocean and you run from the wave, you're more likely to fall, to trip up in the surf, or to get clobbered from behind by the wave hitting you. And even a 6-foot swell, which isn't very big, crashing on your head is strong enough to make you plant your face in the sand. You'll have the air knocked out of you. You'll swallow seawater. You might get tossed tumbling around like you're in a washing machine. So if you're a kid growing up on the beach, you learn that the proper way to handle a big wave is to turn toward it, move into the wave, hold your breath, and you can duck right under it. It washes over you, it does, but it doesn't throw you. It doesn't smash you against the shore. The mystery of Easter and Christ appears to be that it is possible to do something similar with death. You cannot outrun death. You are not stronger than death. It will catch you, and the harder you run from it, the harder it will throw you when it crashes on your head. But if you turn into it, if you face the shadow, the oncoming wave, then you can let it wash over you and discover that you've come through the other side. In fact, the sooner that we have the courage to dive into that wave, the better that our emergence from it will be. The longer you wait, the more chance that it's going to break right on top of you. To use the words of the psalmist, there is no way around the valley of the shadow of death. You cannot go around it. The only way is through it. The only way to the other side of the valley of the shadow of death is through it. And so the psalmist tells us that the destination and the way look the same. The way through the valley of the shadow of death, the psalmist says, is fearing no evil. And the destination on the other side is a table made in the presence of our enemies. In other words, the way of Jesus, of forgiveness and love for enemies, of facing death and even moving toward it, that is the way through the valley, and that is the destination and what it looks like when we pass through to the other side. And here is what it might look like if we were to face the shadow of death in its national, personal, and institutional varieties with this fearless love of Christ. When facing the shadow of death in national events, if we turned into the wave rather than away from it, we would treat the criminals who attack and murder civilians with the same dignity we treat other criminals. We would afford them the same rights we afford everyone. We would not retaliate with bombs of our own, nor would we, in fear, retreat as a society away from the values of freedom and equality, which are our best legacy. And when facing the shadow of death in our personal lives, we would go directly to the hurt and suffering rather than avoiding those in our lives who are in pain because they make us uncomfortable. We would walk through the veil with them. We would show ourselves prepared to face their darkness, and thereby we would prepare ourselves spiritually and emotionally to die ourselves with grace and to show love and kindness for every day that we have remaining. And when facing the shadow of death as an institution, if we were to face that wave, to turn into it like Christ, we would not panic and turn away from the real work of ministry to focus instead on things like finances and membership. We would not mistake worship attendance for discipleship. We would instead seek to love one another and to love the least and last. And we would even generously give away that which we have, embracing our own death for the sake of resurrection. For the Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside still waters. He restores my soul. He leads me in the right paths for his name's sake. And even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. For your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup overflows. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life. And I shall dwell in the house of the Lord my whole life long.